Mention the word hunger in the relative prosperity of today's America, and you might prompt images of Depression-era breadlines along urban streets or malnourished children in rural hollows. But hunger remains a daily part of the American experience. The Department of Agriculture estimates more than 20 million Americans are what bureaucrats call food insecure. That means they either go hungry or are unsure of where their next meal will come from. The faces and causes of hunger have shifted over the years. According to America's Second Harvest, the nation's largest hunger relief organization, growing numbers of suburbanites are seeking help from food banks, and often the reason is a result of mental illness. NPR's Allison Aubrey visited a suburban Washington, D.C. food bank and has the story of one family.
Ronnie Traficanti stands in the dining room of her Rockville, Maryland home. Her daughters and a nephew race through the house. But Ronnie is focused on her dining room credenza, a glass-enclosed shrine to her 300 pig tchotchkes.
Some of them are like dollar store toys. Oops, as I drop them all. The necklace on that one stuffed animal I got at a convention, a self-help convention. So a lot of them have a lot of special meaning.
Ronnie has a thing for pigs, so about a year ago, she decided to adopt the real thing, two pet pigs, Pigtail and Wilbur. Their arrival overwhelmed the house.
We put child locks on all the cabinets, and the pigs, using their snout, figure out how to open the child locks. So we moved all the food to the upper cabinets, and anything I did, they figured out. I mean, that's how intelligent they were. One night I was talking on the phone, and the pig wanted fed, and I wouldn't feed him, and he bit the phone cord in half.
The pigs were helping themselves in the kitchen cabinets at a time Ronnie was having trouble putting meals on the table for her kids. Most food in the house now comes from a food bank.
Cooking chicken breast and skinning it, and I'm going to use the stock to cook the rice and hopefully use the chicken salad for another meal. Try to stretch it into three meals. And sometimes it doesn't stretch, like last night. I made a pot roast and carrots, potatoes, everything was gone.
Ronnie's hands shake, and she nervously runs her hands through her long blonde hair. She skipped meals today, says she forgot to eat. She's running on coffee and a cocktail of antidepressants to treat her bipolar disorder.
Right now, I'm just robbing Peter to pay Paul. My bills are behind. There's just nothing I can do till I get employment. And I'm on five medications now. I have to pay a $20 copay for every time I see my specialist, which is twice a month, plus $120 a month in prescriptions. You know, so that really cuts into my budget. And if I don't take it, you know, then what? Then I'm not there for my children.
She's at home most of the day. For now, she's working just 15 hours a week as a convenience store cashier. Her last job became a casualty of her manic depression. Ronnie says that position almost got her back on track financially after a messy divorce. She was making $15 an hour as a dining room manager, but her mood swings overwhelmed her ability to work. Ronnie recalls her last manic spell.
When I was going through my mania, it was like I do the work of six or seven people. It was just like I was Pepe Le Pew. It was like ping, 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 you know, and I had to get everything done right then, right that day. And I mean, even the speed that I walked was triple the speed that I walked when I was in one of my depressed moods. And then, you know, now that I'm being medicated and treated, it's kind of a crashing to come down to a calm, normal reality.
Ronnie managed to keep custody of her daughters, hang on to her three-bedroom house, and her pigs, Wilbur and Pigtail, at least for a while. She hasn't applied for food stamps, even though it'd be an easier way to put food on the table. She says any day she'll be back on her feet. That attitude doesn't surprise Mary Chabanneau, director of Mana Food Bank, where Ronnie goes for help.
We've seen middle-class people who've lost all their money and didn't come or didn't apply for aid because they thought each month that surely their depression or their chronic illness would go away that month.
Ronnie's not alone. Chabanneau says 40% of the people who come to Mana are treated for mental illness. And many, like Ronnie, live a seemingly comfortable suburban lifestyle. Ronnie's children play with neighborhood kids on their neat tree-lined street of brick split-level homes. But they don't talk with their friends about what goes on inside their home. Mary Chabanneau sees this all too often.
And it's just that awful situation for a child in a family who can't perceive it as an illness, which would call forth sympathy and kindness from other people. If their parent had cancer, the neighborhood would be rallying, the church would be rallying.
But that's not the case here. Ronnie's mental illness remains hidden to the neighborhood. Hunger is the direct result. This means Ronnie's middle daughter, Rosalie, is often fending for herself. She gets free lunch at school, and also the structure she's missing at home.
Miss Campbell, can you go?
Wearing her bright orange safety belt, Rosalie directs fellow students at a crosswalk. The fifth grader says she likes the security, the predictability, the order that comes along with being a patrol.
And everybody listens to patrols because they know the consequences. They go to the principal's office. And we don't have too much control about our other life, about our real life, because it's not that easy to tell someone to wait to do this and then go ahead and do that.
For instance, Rosalie says she can't tell her mom to buy groceries, even though her mom has promised to put food on the table. She remembers nights with no dinner at all.
Sometimes I really want a good, nice meal, but most of the time we didn't get anything really nice. It was hard, though, because having people say, oh, I had a great dinner last night, and then you say, I didn't have a dinner last night, it's really hard.
It's not just the lack of food that upset Rosalie. It's the chaos at home, too, like with the pigs. At first, she liked Wilbur and Pigtail, but then they became embarrassing, like the time her mother called the police when Wilbur got into a fight with a neighborhood dog. To Ronnie, her mom, it was just a funny run-in with police officers.
They were questioning me, and they sent someone here for a sobriety check on me. And then they called me back and apologized and asked if other officers could come see the pigs.
Ronnie finally gave the pigs to a farmer. She says she needs to give her kids a more stable home life and put decent meals on the table. But this requires actions, decision-making, hard tasks for Ronnie.
I feel like a BB rolling down a razor blade, and every decision I make is going to cut somewhere.
So for the moment, Ronnie settles in at her kitchen table, holding her guitar and listening to a tune by Four Non Blondes she's played over and over.
Like how it changes, because that's how I feel. It goes soft and then hard. That's how my moods swing.
As Ronnie strums and sings, a pot of broth on the stove simmers into tonight's dinner. She's stretching the food and dreaming of the day when she can feel more secure.
25 years and my life is still trying to get up that great big hill of hope. For a destination.
Allison Aubrey, NPR News, Rockville, Maryland.